welcome to Midnight Movie Mania, Episode 2. I'm your host, Keith W. Cunningham. In today's episode, the panel and I will be discussing The Brain That Wouldn't Die. But first, let's discuss our cartoon. Today's cartoon is one of the Fleischer Brothers Studios Superman shorts from 1942. This one was the episode called Volcano. It was released on July 17th, 1942, and deals with Clark Kent and Lois Lane being tasked by the Daily Planet to go to the island of Manacoa, where a volcano is about to erupt, and cover the story of an engineering attempt to channel the lava safely away from a village. Now, of course, things go wrong. Lois Lane hides Clark's press pass, and he has to go to try to retrieve a new one, so she begins to cover the story without him. Not a real classy move on her part. Actually, you gotta wonder why, in this era of the comics, Superman was into Lois Lane at all, because they really portrayed her as not a very nice person. But I guess that was just part of the shtick they were going for. Also, you have to wonder how somebody with X-ray vision and super hearing could be duped by her just hiding the press pass in her purse. But aside from that, he goes to try to get a new press pass while she begins to cover the story. And the volcano begins to erupt before they can explode the demolition charges that will channel the lava into the ocean and away from the village. So, Superman must step in and save the day, deflecting boulders and saving Lois as she crawls hand over hand over a sky car cable. That's a short episode. It comes in at only a little bit above 7 minutes, so there's really not much more to it than that. He just kind of jumps around, punches some rocks, and he fixes the demolition charges, blows off side of the volcano to stop the lava flow. There's really not a whole lot else to say about this short. I'm not sure. I believe it was played in front of a film, but I really can't find any information on when the which film it was actually attached to originally. It probably actually rotated around depending on what the projectionist attached it to, now that I'm thinking of it. It's a really well-animated film for 1942. The Fleischer Brothers Studios had a solid mastery of line work and form. What it lacks in dynamic action poses, it makes up for in mastery of anatomical precision. Now, we're going to take a short break, and after the break, when we get back, we'll discuss our feature film.
You've lost the urge to experiment.
Oh, every time you touch me, I go out of my mind.
Her brain kept alive by experimental science, by a man whose abnormal passions inspired him to try the impossible.
I brought her back. She'll live and I'll get her another body.
Yes, and what of her soul? How can you make of her an experiment of horror?
His mad ambitions and desires threaten every woman possessing an attractive body. Girls whose measurements make them beauty contest participants. Professional figure models such as this. All are prey to his distorted desires.
What's locked behind that door? horror no normal mind can imagine. Something even more terrible than you.
Horror has its ultimate, and I'm that.
Behind that door is the sum total of Dr. Cordner's mistakes.
He intends to kill somebody. To rob them of their body. We've got to stop him!
And we're back to discuss our feature, The Brain That Wouldn't Die, the film that says nothing says love like carrying your fiancé's severed head around in a blanket. With me to discuss the film today... Don't interrupt me!
I thought you were done.
I was going to introduce you, but now I don't even know.
You don't even know who I am.
No, nobody does. With me to discuss the film is this guy. Why don't you introduce yourself?
How about My name is Keith Cunningham from Springboro, Pennsylvania.
Don't tell people where I live.
Everybody knows where you live. No, my name is Christian Kaczynski, Keith's partner in crime.
Yes.
He makes me do his dishes.
Yes, as well you should. Barefoot and pregnant.
And for some reason, his laundry. He's got very tiny underwear.
To accentuate my bulges.
True. So, what would you do if you got into a car accident?
No. You're supposed to explain who you are to people, and then we'll go into it.
Oh, wait. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I didn't realize there was a...
Nobody cares who random name guy is. You gotta prove your credentials.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I am the co-host of Cinerama, a show in which Keith co-founded, and then
I jumped ship on that.
Yeah, because it was a sinking ship.
How long will this show last? We don't know.
No, I'm
10 minutes later. I've
been around for 4 years now, 5 years, and we got to have Keith back one of these days.
I will be.
We still haven't done a Superman episode.
Really?
Yeah.
You should do like a retrospective of like all the Superman films at this point.
I'd like to. I still have to see the third one, but I've seen the fourth one.
I have to rewatch 3 and 4 because it's been so long. But
4 being the
Quest is 4 for Peace.
Oh, okay. Never mind. I'm saying I've never seen the 3rd and 4th. I've seen the 5th.
Superman Returns?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw that at your old theater.
I'm sorry. I know somebody who worked on Superman Returns as a storyboard artist.
I got that beat.
Superman.
I've got a buddy who is really good friends with Brandon Routh. He said they used to call him BJ.
Well, there you are.
Yeah.
BJ.
BJ. BJ Routh.
BJ Routh.
Yeah.
Brain That Wouldn't Die is a 1962 film directed by Joseph Green from a screenplay by Joseph Green and an original story by Joseph Green and Rex Carlton. Joseph Green is also the caterer, probably. It stars Jason Evers, sometimes known as Herb Evers, as Dr. Bill Cordner, a medical doctor researching radical organ transplant technology, who, in an attempt to save the life of his dying fiancée, Jan Compton, played by Virginia Lath, takes her severed head and breathes new life back into it, with dire consequences.
So, I'd like to just say that this is the first time I've seen this movie. I did not see it before this.
Really?
Yeah,
when
no.
Did you watch it?
Huh?
When did you watch it?
Just like today.
Wow, okay. It's even more fresh for you than me.
Yeah, because I didn't see it when Brad showed it, And I know it's kind of like one of those heavy hitters of the B-movie scene.
Oh, yeah. It's on, you know, every collection of, like, old movies, it's, like, on there.
Yeah. And it was pretty easy to find, too, obviously. I mean, I just went to YouTube, and the movie was, there's, like, four different versions of it on YouTube.
Yeah. I'm sure it's probably on archive.org or
yeah,
any number of different sites, because I'm pretty sure it's public domain.
So I watched it for free, legally.
Mm-hmm. What did you think of it?
Yeah, well, it was silly. It definitely is a lot more of a genuine horror film than some of the other B-movies that are out there. Like, they definitely were trying to take themselves seriously and did a pretty good job of making a horror movie. I think it's it was pretty well-told story and well-thought-out. I love the fact that they didn't show the monster until right at the end.
To me, that was the very best part. There's a monster in the film that's made up of basically his early attempts, him and his assistant, to graft body parts onto another body and so that the body would not reject it. And as part of the process of rejecting it, this thing became even more deformed and monstrous and insane, which is completely contrary to how rejection works, but let's forgive that because, yeah. But it's kept behind a door for a bulk of the movie, giving you a real sense of, you have no idea what it looks like, which is successful given that there's no way that they can really sell a terrifying monster. Even in the few moments it was on screen, it became more and more ridiculous the longer it was there.
It was pretty ridiculous. Didn't the head or the face of the monster remind you a little bit of Sloth from the Goonies?
Yes. Yeah. I with that little door built into the larger door, I expected his gimp-armed assistant to have to feed him Milky Way bars. Just
that's his favorite.
Hey, you guys.
There was something specific I was going to say about that monster, but did you
the eye in the middle of its cheek or something?
Yeah, oh, it was like a droopy eye.
Yeah,
that's what I read it as, a droopy eye. But
that was a little beyond droopy. But
did you look at all at the at the backstory of the actor who played the monster?
No, I did not.
He was a circus performer known as the Jewish Giant, and he toured with Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey, and that was like one of two of his film roles.
How tall is he?
He was he claimed to be like 8'9", but I guess in reality he was like 7'10" or something. He was like a foot taller than he. Actually, or he claimed to be a foot taller than he actually was.
Oh, 7'10" is nothing to sneeze at.
No, I know. But those hands, the first time they showed him, I jumped just seeing the size of the guy's hands. Ridiculous.
Well, I thought that was like a fake arm.
Actually. Oh, did you? I thought it was real. That made me jump.
Well, I know there was a real arm in it because it could move, but I assumed that they just like stuck it into like a sleeve of something, you know. But I didn't realize he was actually that large.
For a long time, I thought they weren't even going to show the monster.
Well, you can't do that.
Yeah, but that would be.
You gotta have the money shot, man.
Yeah. Well, it would definitely make it more dramatic.
Okay. Well, let's explain a little bit more about the story.
Yeah.
The doctor.
He's like a modern day Dr. Bill.
He's not even a modern day Frankenstein. It's amazing though, because he was just trying to like enhance organ transplant technology.
Yeah.
Which at the time was still relatively new because they didn't have the anti-rejection drugs that they do now. But to consider that mad, I highly doubt that at the time doctors would really see that as a particularly an insane field of research.
You think they would or wouldn't?
Wouldn't.
Okay.
they played it like he was, you know, trampling in God's affairs. But he was, like, trying to, like, you know, give people new heart valves and stuff.
Replacing limbs.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he did bring that guy back to life at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, but you think the thing is, though, he did that through essentially open heart massage.
Yeah,
he gave him the serum, whatever it was, his anti rejection serum was. Even though he didn't really need that, all he did was just resuscitate him.
Right.
But the guy was brain dead, so.
And he had to surge electricity through him.
Yeah. Which is, like, essentially defibrillation.
Yeah.
So I don't understand why his father was looking at him as like, you're mad!
That this whole is
crazy sauce!
That whole speech that his father gave on, like, the ethics of playing God was ridiculous.
It was so, like, I'm pretty sure they copy-pasted most of it from other stories.
Either that, or they were like, he's, like, writing it, and he's thinking, this is genius. I'm going to make a ton of money on this.
Well, clearly he did.
Yeah.
Because this is held up next to Casablanca.
That's true. This is the Casablanca of bad movies.
I did find it interesting that he was able to just give this experimental serum to this patient without, like, having to have consent from his family.
Yeah, he's probably got a do not resuscitate order. Okay. Like, what did you do? You brought him back to life? But, you know, this is the same guy who, when his girlfriend's on the verge of death, he cuts her head off and
carries it around in a blanket, takes it to his secret cavern laboratory with his gimp-armed assistant.
That's not weird. Puts it
in a tray with some weird, with his weird serum, and brings her back to well, let's call it life. You know, for a woman whose entire body was destroyed in a fire, her head was in amazingly pristine condition.
Yeah, her face was still pretty beautiful.
She did not have a scratch on her.
Maybe
he just didn't like her body and decided he was going to upgrade. Saw a good excuse.
I can finally have the dream girl I've always wanted. Which is
what he did afterwards.
Yeah.
Knowing that his fiance would need a new body, he went to and started shop around for a
while. Yeah, he went shopping.
He went to a strip club and tried to pick up a stripper so he could murder her. Cut her head off.
The one thing I couldn't figure out is why didn't he just do it the old-fashioned way and, like, cause a car accident, you know?
Well, yeah, or I guess they might have had issue showing, like, him hiring a prostitute.
Yeah. How about that cat fight, by the way?
The ridiculous, after he leaves because this other stripper comes in, they get into this several-minute-long cat fight. Just that has nothing to do with the rest of the film.
I read online that there's a longer extended cut of that.
Of course there is.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the camera goes over to a picture of a cat on the wall and you hear a meow.
Yeah, cat bite. That was the whole reason for making the movie.
Yes.
They were like, okay, we got an idea. We're gonna shoot a cat fight.
Well, you know, it's because they had the swimsuit competition later in the movie too.
The swimsuit competition I thought was a little redundant because he didn't even end up using any of those girls.
No, he didn't. It was great. This sequence, he keeps trying to pick up women and then gets interrupted, and he just looks so downtrodden. Every time, because it's like, okay, he's got the girl in his car, and this other girl comes in. Yeah, she could come with us, and he's just like, I guess we better not go to the cabin. There won't be time now.
I love how that girl just invited that other girl without asking him. Yeah. She's like, you can come in too.
I love how quickly he went from I'm going to save millions of lives to, I'm just going to kill somebody.
I got to save my girlfriend.
Yeah. There was no, like, thought process to this. He instantly was just like, get, going to kill somebody. And what's great is he was sizing up the bodies. It's not that he was just desperate to get anybody. He wanted a good body for her.
Yeah. He was driving slowly down the street like a creepo.
Yes, he was. And then he was at the swimsuit competition, and he's like, yeah, yeah. And then he hears about the one woman who's, like, supposed to have the best body in town, and he's like, yes, that is the woman I shall murder.
And for some reason, he happens to know her, too.
Yes.
He knew her from his past.
Well, of course, it was a small town. Everyone lived in a small town in the early 60s.
At least a vacation town.
Yes.
Oh, the joys of bad.
Meanwhile, while he's out attempting to find a carcass to latch onto his girlfriend's head, the disembodied head wakes up in the pan. And she is angry that he has saved her life. It takes her about 5 minutes to get over the shock of still being alive, to go from wanting to have revenge for still being alive. She pleads with his assistant to murder her.
Yeah.
Which he won't do. Because he wants a new arm.
Plus, it would be unethical, I guess, for him to do it.
I guess. But it's okay, because she can set things up to release the monster.
And she's got supernatural powers.
I know. It's great, because, you know, when somebody loses one sense, the other senses grow stronger to compensate. So yeah, apparently,
all her senses.
When you lose your body, you become psychic.
There's a psychic bond between the freaks.
You and a freak monster in the closet.
But theoretically, then, she'd also be able to communicate telepathically with Gimp Arm.
Yeah, it was only the between her and other, you know what it was, might have been, actually, it might have been the serum.
The serum gave you psychic powers.
Yeah, and I was wondering if that might have anything to do with Bond, but the creature didn't have any of the serum. That's why he was all disfigured.
Uh-huh.
So.
That'd be like that movie with, what's that movie that, oh, Special?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the drug gave him psychic powers or superpowers, supposedly.
But, spoilers, it did not.
Yeah, you don't need to see that movie.
It was not very good.
No, not at all. But Michael Rappaport is always a treat.
So, okay, basically, the doctor convinces the scar-faced beauty queen model.
Who wasn't really that scar-faced.
No, she had she was able to cover it with her hair.
Yeah.
But she was deeply ashamed of it. I'm guessing that there was implied domestic violence involved there.
Oh, maybe.
I it wasn't very clearly specified, but he gets her to the cabin laboratory, where he has found that the creature has murdered Gimp Armed Assistant on the command of disembodied head girlfriend.
By ripping his other arm off.
Yes, and he bled out on the laboratory floor. So he finds this down in the basement. Gets a little frustrated. Goes back upstairs to offer a drink to the girl, drugging her and prepping her for surgery. As she passes out, he begins to hear a ruckus downstairs and goes to investigate. Not even giving, you know, second thought to, of course it's the creature who ripped the guy's arm off. The creature busts through the door, knocks over some chemicals, and the lab starts to burn down.
It, like, spontaneously combusted.
Yes. The woman's head begins to laugh maniacally as the lab burns around her and her unconscious fiancé. And the creature grabs the woman from upstairs and exits the cabin. End of film. Completely abrupt. We have no idea. There's this creature roaming the woods with this model. Doesn't matter. That's it. We don't need to know what happens after that.
Everybody dies.
One would assume that as soon the first thing that happens, somebody sees it. Farmer grabs a shotgun, shoots it, hits the girl in the crossfire. People don't know what happened. It's some kind of urban legend after that. Moral of the story is, never try to advance medical science. Furthermore, yeah, science, the story science is
something else.
Pay attention when you're making your movie, because you should not have a different title in your opening credits as you do in your end credits.
I saw online it referred to as the opening credit versus the closing credit.
Yes. In the opening credits, it's referred to as the brain that wouldn't die. In the end credits, it has become the head that wouldn't die.
By the way, how about that car accident sequence in the beginning? With like constant. What's that?
That guy was just a bad driver.
But I just mean the way it was edited with like the signs and the crashing noises, and it was kind of interesting the way it was done.
Yeah. Let's see. Let's see what kind of interesting taglines the film had. It only had two taglines. Alive, without a body, fed by an unspeakable horror from hell, which is not actually accurate to the movie. And it's madness, not science. No, it's actually science. We totally transplant organs all the time today. And it saved millions of lives. So, as long as the scientists don't try to, murder strippers afterwards. But you know what? If, you know, they saved millions of other lives, maybe they're allowed to kill a stripper or two.
Yeah, it's part of the deal.
It's part of the Hippocratic Oath.
I was going to say it's actually part of winning a Nobel Peace Prize. That's part of the prize.
You get one kill.
Yeah.
Oh, apparently there's a third title for this movie. It was called The Black Door.
Oh yeah, I did read that.
That door was not black though.
No, after I read that I was kinda like looking at the door going, well, I guess it could be black.
No, that was wood. Just plain brown wood.
Well, it was black and white, so we don't know if it was black or brown, to be fair.
No, it would have been darker if it had been black.
Fair enough.
Yes.
I got nothing.
Oh, this is interesting. The original plan for the film had that the doctor's head would be cut off. And he would be in a similar position to his fiance.
Wouldn't that be a great shot of the two of them side by side in that same contraption?
Yeah. That would have been a great ending. The film was shot in a grand total of 13 days.
Did you see that there's a bunch of Broadway musicals that were based off of this?
Oh, yeah. And obviously, the film went on to influence a bunch of different things.
I was going to say, it made me think of The Man with Two Brains.
Mm-hmm.
The Steve Martin movie.
Yeah. There, the image of the woman's head has been referenced liberally in films that followed.
Yeah, it's very iconic.
Yeah. Well, was there anything else that you had to say about the film?
I don't think so. It's a fun one, for sure.
Okay.
A lot of good, I was going to say, a lot of good dialogue that you can definitely use in your acting monologues.
Yes. One line in particular I took notes for. The alcoholic has his bottle. The dope addict, his needle. I have my research.
Isn't that? That sounds
and
like something.
And scene.
Yeah.
All right. Well, tell the folks where they can find you on the interwebs.
You can read my movie reviews whenever I get around to posting them, called allthingskaczynski.com. And then you can also find me at cineramapod.com.
Cineramapod is the website for Cinerama.
Yep. You can listen to episodes new and old, some with me, some with Keith. It's fun.
The paths of experimentation twist and turn through mountains of miscalculations and often lose themselves in air and darkness.
Amen to that.
Yes.
So what
know, my deformed
you,
friend, like all quantities, horror has its ultimate. And I am that.
Right on.
I think that's a good place to end it right there.
Yeah. So what are you doing next?
In episode 3, I'll be discussing Sharknado.
Oh. Huh. I just saw that you can get it at Redbox. I'm like, I should rent that.
You should.
Yeah.
It is maybe one of the greatest films ever made. I took copious notes for the episode.
That's cool.
So play along at home and watch Sharknado before listening to episode 3, because you will not regret it.
How long is that movie?
It's like 90 minutes long.
Oh. For some reason, I felt like it was going to be like 2 hours or 3 hours or something ridiculous.
Yes. It's actually a trilogy.
They filmed them all at once.
It's based on one of Tolstoy's unpublished novels.
Yeah. It's actually akin to Game of Thrones.
Yes. Only, you know, instead of... No, it's exactly like Game of Thrones. Just replace the one person in the ridiculous sexual scenario with a shark.
And Tara Reid.
Yeah.